Lighthouse, Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes, taking us back to way too long ago. No one will admit to knowing that song, I don't think. And yet you were whistling along. So
yeah, I was.
A good song is always a good song.
I was thinking about it the other day. You know, I was born closer to the Second World War than what I am to my birthday.
Oh, really?
By double.
Well, that puts it in perspective. Eh? Gavin Steinhobel, our attorney at law from Kloppers Inc., is now in the house. We have a nice chat on a Wednesday morning about, generally speaking, whatever is trending, but also it's property related. So I thought maybe we would have a look at some of the, just as a kickoff, some of the stumbling blocks that are most common in property transactions in South Africa. And apparently, just looking at the list, there are quite a few.
Okay, well, let's unpack them.
Well, apparently, financing and bond approval sits at the top. Buyers relying on mortgage approval can face delays or rejections due to a whole bunch of things, and the impact is that it stalls or can collapse a deal if it's not secured in time. I presume that is fair comment.
Well, let's just go to first principles. One thing that we do know, that the average person won't have the millions of rands in cash required to buy a property and will probably be able to stump up some form of deposit in cash and will rely on mortgage finance for the balance of the purchase price. And to obtain mortgage finance, you go off to the banks and you show them your income and your balance sheet, and they decide whether you, first of all, somebody they'd like to lend money to, whether you sort of a low risk individual, and secondly, whether this property that you propose to give them as security for the loan is actually worth what you're buying it for. And so those are important questions for the money lenders. The system of applying for a mortgage loan at the moment is really good because we've got what we call mortgage originators. And so the people who previously sat in the banks and prepared the credit application for the bank to consider went privately. And now what they do is they collate your information. They know precisely how to put it together, what the banks like to see and what they don't like to see. And they then submit it to all the banks. And they get the best rates that they can get. So it's a nice competitive system and gives really beneficial to the consumer.
So these are the bond originators.
Yes, and, yes. Yeah. If you're not going to, if the bank says to you, listen, chap, you're not going to be able to repay a loan to buy a property of this value, then they know better than anybody, because they make a study of these risks and they make a study of people, and they've been doing it for thousands of years. And if the bank says to you, listen, chap, no, then you should really pay attention, because you're about to get yourself into a hole that you'll never dig yourself out of.
And I suppose this is where it goes wrong.
People always, from a consumer's point of view, go, oh, the banks are so unfair and so unapproachable. And so, well, not really. If people who made a science of lending money tell you that you're a bad bet on this, then you should ask yourself why you think you know better. Your mortgage loan application generally is a pretty quick thing in principle. They'll have a look. If you know, you might have a salary advice that you can show them that you earn 100,000 rand a month and you're quite comfortable paying 30 or 40 grand a month to the bank. That's fine. They'll have a look at that, and that'll be quite a sort of a positive thing. Another thing that determines it, you might be buying a 10 million rand home and only need a loan for 5. Okay. So the bank will take a full mortgage on your house, so that no matter what happens, they're going to get paid.
You know,
and
what interests me?
So that's a low risk lend. And so, you know, the banks, you can always tell by the rates they offer you what they view you as in terms of a scale of you know, not risky at all or highly risky. And so, you know, if you get prime less a few percentage points, then you generally a very low risk character. You've paid off many loans historically, and you seem to be a reliable member of society. If it starts getting to the prime plus territory, then, you could also, through no fault of your own, be employed in an industry that the bank doesn't believe will exist, you know, going forward. I'd imagine if you said, like, I'm an ISCO employee in Newcastle, they're going, well, you know, this factory is going to close soon, so, you know, maybe not.
I just wanted to ask you about the interest rate. You mentioned it. Apparently, right about 10.5% is the norm at the moment.
Yeah, so, you know, the banks all sort of follow each other, but generally, you'll have an interest rate set by the Reserve Bank. And the Reserve Bank, that is the rate at which they'll lend money to the banks. The banks obviously will mark that up, because otherwise they wouldn't make any profit. And then so it's called the prime lending rate, and that is that basically that is the lending rate that the banks offer to their preferred clients.
I'm just looking at a calculator here from Better Bond on a property sold the other day in Cape Town for a single bedroom flat in Tamboerskloof sold for 3,295,000 rand.
Okay.
Now, this is what interests me particularly. If you took a bond on that property or not, but certainly this is how the monthly repayments pan out at 10.5% interest. It works out to, if you take the full value of the loan at 3,295,000.
Around the 30 grand mark. Okay.
32,897 rand is your monthly repayment. But listen to this, what your interest calculates out at. The value of the property is 3.2 million rand, roughly. The interest that you're going to be paying on that is 4.6 million.
Yeah, over 20 years.
Yay!
Yeah.
And so your total repayment on that property is nearly 8 million rand. And you think, I got a bargain here.
Well, you know that's one of the best ways to improve your lot is to pay your bond off more quickly. And that's probably good advice to anybody who takes a mortgage loan is to take an access bond. So that is a bond that permits you to pay or to pay monies in when you have spare cash, and then to draw down on it if you're in an emergency. And it does create a situation where by paying down the capital as you go quicker, your interest component obviously won't be that big at the end of your loan. And it really is, it's really something that anybody who takes a bond should say to their bank, look, I really want an access loan. Because if you just take a straight bond, you don't have that flexibility. So you'd like very much to say, well, you know, when I get my, if I get my annual bonus, for argument's sake, and you get like 100 or 200,000 rand, you'd like to put that in your bond, even though you might use it through the year. But while the 200's in there, that's a component that's not attracting interest. And so you save the interest on 200,000 rand, which is a bigger saving than perhaps putting 200,000 rand in any kind of investment where you'll earn less than 10.5% and you'll also pay tax on what you earn.
Wow.
On the interest. So it sort of makes a lot of sense just to hammer your debt if you can. Look, I mean, debt's unavoidable, but we also have the benefit of being able to do things that we wouldn't have be able to do if we didn't incur this debt. For example, you wouldn't have the flat in Camps Bay. You'd have to wait until you've saved 3 million rand.
Yeah, well, yeah,
which is obviously anybody would tell you is a far wiser thing to do.
Yeah, but okay, well, we want it now. We're in that societal. Well,
you need the flat now. You know, you need the house now. You've got kids. You've got a wife. You need to have a nice place to live and so forth. So you know, you make the Faustian pact with the bank, and you say, well, I know this is going to cost me a lot of money, a lot more money over 20 years. But at the moment, I'm thinking of the present, and I need to do certain things.
It's a fascinating conundrum, really, that the world that we live in is geared to instant satisfaction. We know. I mean, this is sage advice.
That makes sense to me, because I think when you reach your age and my age, you start realizing that it's a pretty ephemeral thing, existence, and it comes and goes pretty quickly. So you better make the most of it. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And so, you know, and there's a time in your life, for example, when you've got young kids, where you want to give them a nice place to live, and you don't want to go scrap it out somewhere horrible because you're trying to. So there's always this Faustian pact that you're making with reality, and you're selling bits of the future to make the present better.
Yeah.
And that's all that money, borrowing money, is all about. But that's fine, and it wouldn't exist if there wasn't a demand for it. So I just think people always go, well, you know, we're all being ripped off. Well, okay, well, let's think them away and then think how little, you know, we'd be able to do that we do now.
But so. There is a growing school of thought that is that one should actually understand the beauty and the value of having less. And I thought, whoa, I mean, this sounds kind of draconian. What do you mean having less? Who tells you it's good to have less? But apparently, this continual treadmill to have more is driving us to the brink of burnout.
It depends on what your, you know, it depends on what your personal philosophy is. I've just always felt that, you know, while people like consuming, like buying, like owning new things, new cell phones, new cars, and all of that is a massive driver to the economy as well. And that also creates an uptake for people to be employed. That creates opportunities for scientific discovery and so forth and so forth. So, you know, people always take a very simplistic view and they go, well, I'll be a lot happier if I didn't have desires. Well, you know, it's our desires that drive us and drive our economies. So, you know, to me, I think, well, go for it. You know, if you're the sort of person who likes to acquire things and to have a lot of things, then you must go for it if that makes you happy because it's good for all of us. And if you're the sort of person who says, well, you know, I'll never have all the things that I really want, and until then I can't be happy, so I'd rather just not want them. Well, that's fine as well. You know, go ahead with that. But it's not great for the economy, and it's not great for your neighbors. So, you know, we do, unfortunately, one of the things that we do need to do is we need to keep consuming. I don't buy into this idea that consumption is a bad thing, because if it was a bad thing, or if we didn't have these desires to constantly improve and have better things, we'd all still be running around in caves and knocking each other on the head, because there would have been no progress. And it's that mimetic desire that societies have that push us along beyond just being happy with our lot. While we're constantly unhappy with our lot, we will constantly be motivated to improve our lot. So.
But we will constantly be unhappy because we can never really satisfy that desire.
Yes, but I mean that's the human condition. You know, that's any animal's condition. And that is the fact that you live in the material world.
Does the animal not live in a space where as long as it has enough, it's happy?
Well, yes, but they seldom do have enough. And so, you know, it's...
But isn't that the sort of message that has been coming through the eons from all the sages, is that it's good to strive to have enough and enough to go round.
But we see in our politics, you know, when there is no enough, you know, when you're stealing money from Tembisa Hospital in the billions and then you go, well, you know, you can like anything go too far. And so there are people that go too far. But, I mean, the average person's wants and desires are fairly mediocre. But I'm glad they have them. I'm glad people want better homes, and I'm glad that there's a property market that I can make a living from. And, you know, I'm sure there's car manufacturers that are glad that people want the latest BMW or the latest Range Rover. And that in itself creates a lot of technological advance and employment and... you know, just if you think of the chain of products that make a motor car, right down to the mining that where you get the metals and so forth. I'm not a Luddite. I don't think that we should go back to like Gandhi did with spinning our own thread and so forth. I just think that'll be a societal collapse and disaster. You know, I think people need to continue to strive and to want things.
Ooh, you're beginning to sound a bit like Cruella de Vil. Okay, but that's fun. You're an attorney. Another problem, apparently, that creates issues around property transfer is missing documents and title deeds in particular. Is this something that you've come across?
Well, most people start scratching around for their title deed, and the first thing I ask them is, do you have a bond? Yes. The bank's got the deed. That's their security. The minute that bond is registered, your title deed goes off to the bank safe.
Is it a piece of paper? Is it a physical piece of paper?
Yes, it's a physical piece of paper.
And the bank holds that in a vault somewhere?
They hold that in a vault. And the only reason that they hold it is that you... if you want to transfer that property or do anything with that property, that original document has to go back to the deeds office.
Wow.
And it either gets cancelled and the new deed given to the new owner, or the bond on it gets cancelled, in which case there's an endorsement on that document that says this property is bonded, and that endorsement gets cancelled.
So these must be, in some cases, fairly ancient bits of parchment, right? Oh,
I'll tell you what, if you look at the old deeds, they're beautiful. You know, the diagrams attached to them are coloured in, and you know, the rivers are depicted and mountain ranges and things like that. It's really beautiful, the old deeds, and it's in this calligraphy. You know, if you can find a deed that's 100 or 120 years old.
But as long as you own that, you need to have knowledge of or physical possession of that piece of paper.
What happened is we don't run like they do in some American states where, you know, your deed is the only proof that you own that land. And if you lose your deed or something happens, you know, you've got no evidence and you've got to go back and have, you know, maybe apply to court for a new deed or so forth. In South Africa, what we do is we keep duplicates. So in the old days, when I first started practicing, you'd send the deed office two draft deeds. And they'd stamp both, give you yours, and then file the other one. Okay. And that's so there's a whole floor at the in the basement of the deeds office in Maritzburg where all these old deeds are kept. Then they went on to like a microfiche, sort of microfilm basis where they just copied the deed and then they kept those microfiche, microfilm. Now it's all electronic. So we only send one draft deed in. The minute the registrar signs and stamps it, that's the operative deed. And they will scan it. And then they'll pop off the, they'll give you your original deed back. When you deal with your property, that original deed has to go back to the deeds office. Now, it happens that people move house or they have water damage or something. And then the next thing that you know, this deed's nowhere to be found. Because there's a duplicate system, you can apply to the deeds office for a duplicate of your deed. And they will then print it out and issue it as a duplicate original.
But being a South African institution, no doubt this takes a lot of effort and probably a lot of time.
No, we can do it simultaneously with transfer of your property. Really? So by the time we're ready to transfer the property, the duplicate deed is already there at the deeds office, and off we go. The problem that we've encountered is that initially you had to advertise that you've lost your deed. The reason is somebody might be holding that deed as security. And they need to know that you're now trying to
offload
to make a duplicate of a deed that they're holding. All right. Now, that's not security, by the way, holding somebody's deed. You have to actually register a bond. But in any event, at some stage, the conveyance has just said to the Department of Justice, look, you know, I mean, putting these people to all this expense of advertising is not necessary. You know, there's nobody can be prejudiced. If you haven't registered a bond, then you don't have security over the property. And even if the person wants a duplicate deed, there's no real prejudice to anyone. And they said, well, you don't have to then advertise for a while. And then they brought it back. So now we have to advertise. And the real cost in getting a new deed is probably you're going to pay a couple of thousand rand for the advert.
Where does it have to appear?
Well, in a local newspaper of reasonable circulation.
Does anyone still get newspapers?
I know. Well, we still have to advertise. So every time you lose your deed, we have to pay a couple of grand. I think it's going to cost you about 5,000 rand to get a new deed.
Wow.
And that's such an unnecessary expense. So if you have your own title deed in your possession, you should keep it safe, in a safe, and make sure that nothing happens to it. But it's not a train smash. It's not like you'll lose your title to your property. It's not like you can't deal with your property. It just means you're going to put yourself to some expense you would otherwise have saved. So,
and that is why you need to be in the hands of an attorney or a company of attorneys that is proven and trusted and recognized. And that's why we chat with our friend Gavin every Wednesday, because that's your business.
Yeah,
that's what Kloppers we do. Inc. So if you're looking at the legal side of property, and have a chat with Gavin down in the Bolito Village. And Gavin, is always an interesting conversation. I look forward to the next
one. Yeah, I love speaking to you.
And this will be up as a podcast, so you can listen again and share it, and generally speaking, listen on demand. That's the way we go these days. The morning